This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, online at reformedforum.org. On this program, we discuss several new and forthcoming books and discuss Britt Hume's comments on Fox News relating to the forgiveness and redemption offered in Jesus Christ. All this and more ahead on the Reformed Media Review. Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. My name is Camden Busey. I am here with Jeff Waddington, and this is our occasional look at books and culture, all things that are out there from a Reformed perspective. Let's jump right into it, Jeff. It's great to have you back.
It's good to be back.
Oh, yeah. We always enjoy this, and we've missed your tola legge at the end of this program for the last couple episodes.
Well, you remind me to say it at the end, and I'll do my best.
Okay. Well, we actually haven't announced new books for a few weeks, so maybe there's a stockpile coming up. What do you have on the list?
Well, the one that now some of these, of course, our listeners may already be aware of. So we're a little slow on the uptake these days. But one of Calvin at the Center, and it's by Paul Helm, and it looks like a tiny volume two of John Calvin's Ideas. Do you remember that book?
Yes.
Which was a very fascinating book, looking at the philosophical influences on Calvin. And this continues that.
Okay.
In that vein, it is also an Oxford University Press title. When it becomes available, it'll be selling for $79.20 at the Westminster Bookstore.
Hey.
Yeah,
golden pages again.
It is the first one. The John Calvin's Ideas was $99.
Oh man.
And there are lots of new books coming out, but that one and only one other that I wanted to.
Well, that's what you get. I mean, those publishers publish some of the best academic work out there, and that's what they price because mostly libraries are buying it.
Now, the two other volumes worth mentioning, actually three, we've got to mention.
Let's do four.
Okay. Our friend, following proverb.
Yeah.
Three books are important. No,
three.
Four.
No, four.
Yay, four. Yeah. The second one is by Ian Hamilton, who I believe Chad Van Dixhorn served with over in England, did he not?
I am unaware of that. Very well,
I
maybe
could
the
be
case.
Wrong. Feel free, folks, from over in the UK to correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought at the Presbyterian Church in Cambridge that Ian was the pastor there. But he's got a book called The Erosion of Calvinist Orthodoxy. It is going to be a Christian-focused publication.
Okay.
And it looks interesting. It's called Drifting from the Truth in Confessional Scottish Churches. So it's dealing more specifically with the Scottish situation. But, you know, the Scotsmen are human beings, and we're human beings, and so we have something in common. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, I do believe in a fixed human nature. Anyways, I'm wandering off. The two other books. One is and I don't think it's out yet, but it's the second volume in that series that Scott Clark is editing, An Exposition of the Apostles' Creed by Caspar Olivier.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that's following on the Ames sketch of the Catechism.
Okay.
Came out earlier this year.
Okay.
And then did I already mention this, or did I started mentioning this? David Van Drunen's book on the two kingdoms. And
we had spoken about it when he was on discussing his book on bioethics, but
right.
We didn't have any details.
Well, it's due out this month, January 2010. It's an Erdmann's title, and it's, I believe, in the same series as the Grable book.
Okay.
On natural law in the Reformed tradition, the Emory University series and something or other, but that's also available through the Westminster Bookstore, and I'm sure Westminster West will be carrying that. Definitely something you want to be on the lookout for then.
Yeah. Well, I have one. I don't believe we've mentioned this. You might have mentioned it a long time ago, but it's still yet to come out. It's on the Coming Soon page of the Westminster Bookstore, A Theology of John's Gospel and Letters, The Word, the Christ, the Son of God.
Ah, yes, by Kestenberger.
Yes, right? Andreas J. Kestenberger. It is in the Biblical Theology of the New Testament series. So,
An acquaintance
from
of
Zondervan.
Mine has just done a review of it, but I have not seen the review.
Wonderful.
But he did tell me that it's a very fine theology. It's not really a commentary, is it?
No, it's probably more. I don't know how much affinity he has for him, but it's probably more similar to the Ritterboss commentary on
John. Okay.
I'm guessing it's a theological commentary, or in this case, simply just a theology of John's gospel and letters. But Ritterboss has his John commentary, but it's not not a commentary as other commentaries are. So maybe it's similar. I'm very interested to see that.
That would be, well, the reports I've gotten, and my friend is, have we interviewed Anthony Salvaggio?
No.
We haven't. We should.
To-do list.
Anthony was the editor of the Festschrift for Wayne Spear? No, the gentleman who retired from the Reformed Presbyterian Seminary.
Okay.
In Pittsburgh. You remember, Once Delivered to the Saints, Once for All Delivered, I believe was the title. It was a PNR title.
Okay.
In the same series that the Lethem book was in.
Okay.
On the Westminster Assembly in its historical time, in the Reformed faith. But anyways, he says it's a very good volume, but I have not actually seen the review.
Wonderful. Well, I can't wait to read this. It's underrated. It's kind of hard to say that, but when we think of redemptive history, almost always we think of Paul.
Right.
But John's letters are amazingly redemptive historical. The two-age eschatology is just drenched throughout the letters. It's
I think we should say probably all of the books are that way.
Of course.
The book of Hebrews, right?
Yes, we can't say that
flavor.
There aren't any books that aren't redemptive historical, but...
we often think of Paul. He's the one he's our default New Testament writer when we're thinking of those things. But even Ritterboss did The Coming Kingdom, right?
Oh, yeah, with the Gospels.
Was dealing with Matthew.
I'm actually reading that right at the moment, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I've read a bunch of it before, but I decided to pick it back up in the interim. Phenomenal book. If anyone hasn't read it, pick one up. Ritterboss is The Coming of the Kingdom. It's so influential and helpful just in thinking of the Gospels and the various accounts. It's a really important book to know and to know well.
Yes, I agree.
Well, what else do we have out there?
We want to mention that the 2009 edition of the Confessional Presbyterian has finally been issued.
Now, it's Calvin on the cover.
It's got a color cover. This is, I think, the first color cover.
And those are original artwork, aren't they?
Every cover, I think, is done for the Confessional.
Oh, it's beautiful. I really enjoyed it when I saw the picture. I don't have a copy yet. I need to buy one.
It's a pretty substantial. They've been getting, I think, with each issue, they're larger than the previous one.
So it's kind of like the Hughes Oliphant old series.
There you go. That's right. On History of Preaching. But this is number 5. I believe number 5.
The geometric progression in size.
You got it. And it's got some excellent stuff in there, despite the fact that I have a review and Jim Cassidy has an article. You can otherwise assume that the people who are writing in it know what they're talking about.
Now, is this your review on the Union with Christ books?
It is the three books that I did, J. Todd Billings, and Michael Horton, and Mark Garcia. There's also a review of Venema's book on Union with Christ by Dr. Gaffin.
Oh.
A whole bunch of interesting articles, as you might imagine, that tied in with the 500th anniversary
of course,
Calvin's birth. So that's be on the lookout for that. I thought I got an email yesterday or the day before that they still had a special. If you order all 5 issues, you get a discount. But you might want to check the website for the Confessional Presbyterian. Don't take my word on that.
And now the next big date I've been thinking that we need to all think about is 2017. I suppose that'll be the mega event of all mega events when that comes around here in 7 years. The 500th anniversary of the nailing of the 95 Theses to the Castle Church door in Wittenberg, which incidentally probably wasn't as big of a deal as we've made it out to be.
No, what's happened is we're reading back the influence of the event onto the event itself.
Regardless.
At the time, nobody was paying attention to Brother Martin, Professor Martin, because this was the normal way of announcing an academic debate.
Of course.
Right. It wasn't the the horrendous thing in terms of the physical act of nailing a piece of paper to a castle door.
We might have better placed the key theatrical event is when he came outside in protest and burned all the Catholic books.
Yeah, in the town square. Especially when he burnt the Ex Surge Domine.
Yes, Ex Surge Domine.
Arise, O Lord. If
Hollywood wants their Hollywood moment, that's actually probably a better one and more historically accurate.
Would be.
But regardless, the publishers are already working towards 2017. I've heard of works that are on the way for 2017. So we'll keep our eyes peeled.
Well, that's not that far away. It's 7 years,
Nope. So I would imagine that in 7 years we will have probably 10 times the amount of attention on Luther as we had on Calvin this year.
Well, it deserves. I mean, without Luther, there wouldn't have been a Calvin, right? So
amen to that.
We need to thank the Lord for that. Thinking of Calvin, I wanted to mention my friend Jung John's book, Calvin and the Federal Vision.
Okay.
Now, you may be familiar with his name because he's the author of the book Covenant Theology.
Is it a comparison of Klein and Murray? Is that
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. This is his newest work, of course, comparing Calvin to the Federal Vision movement. I have not read it yet, so I can't say how good or bad it is. I will tell you, he is a good friend of mine. In fact, when Jim Cassidy and I went to the regional ETS meeting, that's the Evangelical Theological Society meeting down in Washington, D.C., Jung was one of the few people to turn out to hear Jim do his paper. And by the way, that's the paper that's in the new issue of the Confessional Presbyterian.
Oh, wonderful.
Comparing Barth in Turretin on, I believe it's the Covenant of Works, but... so you want to, if you want to know what Jim spoke on, that's the thing, except you'll have the privilege of reading the whole thing where Jim had a time had to skip over all the juicy part. But anyway, Jung's book here is, and he's working on a new project, also on Calvin. Jung is a professor, at the Chesapeake Bay or the Chesapeake Reformed Theological Seminary in Maryland. He's a professor of biblical and systematic theology. Did his MDiv at Westminster West and his PhD at Westminster Seminary in Philadelphia. And I had the privilege, although he didn't give me credit, I had the privilege of editing his dissertation 3 times. first time was actually to submit it.
Jeff's becoming the ghost of publishing America.
Oh, my goodness. And then I edited it twice for publication just to make sure, go over it, make sure it was in proper form for the publisher.
Mm. Well, now it's on record. We all know.
Now it's on record. He would be the first to admit that he should have included a thank you or something.
Not that we're bitter.
You got to have something to hold over your friends,
right.
The next item is called Papal Infallibility, and it's a Protestant evaluation of an ecumenical issue. Now, I've just started reading this. I'm doing it as a review for Themelios, the theology students journal connected with D.A. Carson and Trinity Evangelical Divinity School now. And I think Carl Truman still has a connection with the Themelios.
Yeah, I believe he's an editor of some sort.
Yes, he is. He used to be done out of Great Britain, but now it's connected with the Gospel Coalition,
right?
Which is D.A. Carson's organization that he's involved with. It's an interesting book because it's kind of a parallel critique of inerrancy and papal infallibility. The author is studied with William Abraham. William Abraham is a Wesleyan or a Methodist who has written on canonical issues. And he says you should treat the scriptures as soteriological, but not having any undetermined epistemic status.
Huh.
And, of course, I'm only about 20 pages in, so that'll be a review that will appear at some point in the future in the Themelios, which is now online. The Themelios, you can Google Themelios.
It's at gospelcoalition.org. Right. You can get a PDF.
And it's so that'll appear at some point in the future.
I put a PDF of Themelios on my wife's new Amazon Kindle.
Ooh.
It looks beautiful. It's really great.
Nice. Yeah, they have it's an attractive publication too, even, and that's the wave of the future. Did you hear, by the way, seeing as we discuss all things media, my daughter's reminded me that they're saying that by 2012, CDs will no longer be produced. In other words, music, you'll have to get it as an MP3 down.
Yeah, right. It's shifting in that direction for sure.
Yeah. Will it be interesting to see if that, you know, there'll still be CDs that you can make on your own, you know, but the
need for that is decreasing so much.
True. Now, there are two other books that are not strictly, well, one is called The Line Through the Heart, which is a new book by Jay Budashevsky. Jay is a Roman Catholic, but who writes very thoughtfully, kind of like a C.S. Lewis or a G.K. Chesterton. Hmm. And this is a book about natural law.
Interesting.
And the denial of it in the human heart.
Nine.
Yeah.
Nine.
Well, not the theological denial, the practical denial.
Oh, okay.
In other words, the fact that it's basically, and this, of course, gives rise to the whole discussion of what is natural law. And, of course, I have
the Roman Catholic is going to have a much different answer to that question.
Well, not completely different. That's the thing, as I started looking through it. But anyways, it's he's a very clear writer. He's very gifted. It's published by ISI, Intercollegiate Studies Institute, mm-hmm. which those of you who are familiar with our friend Daryl Hart will know Daryl used to work for ISI.
Mm-hmm.
And from the same publisher, a book by Richard Gamble, not the father, but the son.
Yeah, is this on church and state relations?
Well, it is, but it's called The War for Righteousness, Progressive Christianity, the Great War, and the Rise of the Messianic Nation.
Mm.
So it's on the clerical support of World War I.
Huh. Okay,
that's the Great War.
That's funny, not to get into politics too much, but when we say the Messianic Nation today, I mean right now, what would come to my mind is more progressive. More of a progressive political stance in terms of looking to the state to answer social
right.
Social
now, this
ills.
Is what he means by that. Of course, is not the nanny state, which is what you're thinking of. It's the idea that America could go around and save the world.
Of course, what we might have thought 6 years ago.
Right, which would have been basically what we sometimes call empire building. I guess in the terminology that's used now.
Speaking of empire building, I just saw Avatar last night.
How was it?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. I heard somebody's conspiracy theory today that thought that there was subliminal messages in the IMAX 3D version, which was causing everyone to say that it was great.
Oh,
that everyone
okay.
Should go.
Well,
I don't believe that, but yet I saw it, and I'm planning to speak about this in maybe not the next Reform Media Review, but the one after that. So we'll try to do a more in-depth
treatment.
I thought there was several themes in there that are well worth speaking about from a Reform perspective.
Help me with this. Now, there are blue characters in Avatar, right?
Right.
And there were blue characters in the Smurfs.
They're not the same.
Are they the same?
No, actually, the blue characters in Avatar are 8 to 10 feet tall. So they're definitely not Smurfs.
Oh, yes. Okay. Very different.
But definitely just to whet the appetite of the listener to listen to our next or the episode following, there's quite a progressive or liberal agenda. And the things they were focusing on, I'm not necessarily opposed to, but there's some interesting things in there. Certainly some pagan religious type stuff, which we will definitely talk about, but also Eastern themes and nature and pantheism and all these sorts of things, which I'm not in favor of. But also, you know, this type of themes that would arise from when we discuss the history of the Native Americans in the United States. And then they also make the claim, basically making an implicit connection to the United States and maybe even France's desires in securing parts of the Middle East for the sake of oil. Well, that's not what they say, but there's a definite one-to-one correspondence there, and I think a lot of it betrays James Cameron's own stance on certain issues, but I plan to get into that more in a future episode. I don't want to believe
That would be interesting. Yeah. The one thing I wanted to say about Gamble's book, and Gamble, I think, now teaches at, what's the conservative college? Hillsdale.
Yeah.
Where our good buddy Everett Hennies is a pastor of an OPC work, right?
Absolutely.
In fact, Richard Gamble, I believe, is one of his ruling elders.
Yes, he is.
I was going to say, probably right now, I've read about 20 or 30 pages into the book. The one area where I might disagree with him is not so much in the book, but he wrote a review of my fellow New Jersey presbyter Mark Larson's book on Calvin and the State.
All right.
That was, and of course, I thought Mark did a fairly decent job responding to him. And in other words, and the concern I had was, one can reject the idea of America as a messianic state, but also believe, as I do, that the form of government that we have, at least as the Constitution envisions it, is the best thing out there. Not divinely inspired, but certainly as governments go, the better. And it seems like some folk, if they reject America as the messianic nation, that they also reject the idea that America has an excellent form of government when it's constitutionally set. But right. Anyway, so that's just an interesting observation. But the book, basically the thesis is that it's liberalism, the kind of liberalism that Machen combated, that fed the American idea that they had to save the world.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, he traces the idea. Of course, we've talked about the Puritan idea of the city on a hill, and how, you know, there was that mixture of the state and the church, and there was a tendency to blur the distinction in the early days of our nation's existence.
Right.
And he does trace that out. So it'll be an interesting book. I'd recommend it. He's got a few others also published by ISI. And seeing as he's one of us, OPC, I would encourage you to give a read.
Even if you are not OPC, listener.
That's right. Even if you're not. I mean, you don't have to be OPC. It just happens that he is. Richard Gamble. The son of the Richard Gamble that we...
Actually, I don't think they're related.
Are they not?
I don't think that's true. I was just talking with some people about that on Sunday.
They just happened to have the same name.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
He actually came to teach a Sunday school lesson at our church when he was in town a couple months ago.
Okay.
And actually, yeah. And I don't know if they've ever even met each other.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. So that's at least my understanding. So okay, we'll leave it at that.
Could very well be. None of the books say I'm the son of. I mean, I just assume there was a relationship, but anyway.
Well, at least it goes back to Noah.
Yeah, that's true. Back to Adam, brother.
At least, no, we can get closer than that. We can go to Noah.
That's true.
Okay. Anyway. So any other books to mention?
Well, I was trying to think if, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I've tried, my non-Edwards reading is limited to pretty much to my bedtime reading, so it takes longer to get through books.
Well, that is a great list of things coming up. And now we want to shift gears just a little bit and play a couple audio clips from Fox News. Speaking, this is a politically charged episode. But Nick Batzig, our friend, posted some interesting clips today. So we thought we'd play them at least and just chat about them a little bit. More or less just pass them on to the listener. And these are comments made by Britt Hume in relation to Tiger Woods and his escapades, as it were. I don't know what else this is called. here, let's play these clips. The first one, Nick titled Britt Hume's Advice to Tiger Woods, and then we'll play a follow-up discussion that he had with Bill O'Reilly.
Tiger Woods will recover as a golfer. Whether he can recover as a person, I think, is a very open question, and it's a tragic situation with him. I think he's lost his family. It's not clear to me that whether he'll be able to have a relationship with his children. But the Tiger Woods that emerges once the news value dies out of this scandal The extent to which he can recover, it seems to me, depends on his faith. He's said to be a Buddhist. I don't think that faith offers the kind of forgiveness and redemption that is offered by the Christian faith. So my message to Tiger would be, Tiger, turn your faith, turn to the Christian faith, and you can make a total recovery and be a great example to the world.
Well, Britt's concerned about Tiger's soul, which is admirable. I just made a more straightforward sports prediction, which is that he'll come back and win the Masters. Because, you know, he's still an awfully good golfer, despite the chaos and bad news about his personal life.
Hmm.
Yes, I saw the video. Now, I was reminded that I had heard some time back that Britt Hume was a believer. That would seem, his comments would seem to bear that out.
Regardless, you don't see things like that very often. I mean,
no,
granted, it would have to be said probably on Fox News in order to find the light of day.
Clearly made the other gentleman a little bit uncomfortable.
Right, but he didn't castigate him as you would on MSNBC.
Right, no, that, but it was quite interesting.
Could you imagine if he would have said that on air with Keith Olbermann?
Oh, boy.
Well, let's play a follow-up from the O'Reilly Factor. It's fair and balanced. The no-spin zone. Here we go.
Now, on Fox News Sunday, you got into a subject that was pretty interesting. It's non-political. It's a social embarrassment for Tiger Woods. And you said this about Mr. Woods. Roll the tape.
He's said to be a Buddhist. I don't think that faith offers the kind of forgiveness and redemption that is offered by the Christian faith. So my message to Tiger would be, Tiger, turn your faith, turn to the Christian faith, and you can make a total recovery and be a great example to the world.
Was that proselytizing?
I don't think so. I mean, look, Tiger Woods is somebody I've always rooted for as a golfer and as a man. I've greatly admired him over the years, and I always have said to people that it was the content of his character that made him, beyond his extraordinary golf skills, so admirable. Now we know that the content of his character was not what we thought it was. He is paying a frightful price for these revelations. My sense is that he has basically lost his family. And there's a lot of talk about the endorsements he's lost, but that pales, I suspect, in his mind with what he's lost otherwise. And my sense about Tiger is that he needs something that Christianity especially provides and gives and offers, and that is redemption and forgiveness. And I was really meaning to say in those comments yesterday more about Christianity than I was about anything else. I mentioned the Buddhism only because his mother is a Buddhist and he has apparently said that he is a Buddhist. I'm not sure how seriously he practices that. But I think that Jesus Christ offers Tiger Woods something that Tiger Woods badly needs.
Now, if he does go that route, then he would be accused of, you know, remember in the Bill Clinton years when he got in trouble, he had the Bible and Jesse Jackson, and they were praying, and, you know, wouldn't American
Yeah, but that's true, Bill, and that wouldn't be, and that wasn't the first time. Remember Chuck Colson, who was one of the leading lights of Watergate, if you will.
But he made a true conversion.
What I'm saying is, if Tiger Woods were to make a true conversion, we would know it. It would show through in his being, and he would know it above all, and he would feel the extraordinary blessing that would be, and it would shine because he is so prominent. It would be a shining light, and I think it would be a magnificent thing to witness.
Now, what kind of reaction did you get when you said that? Did you get a lot of letters and emails and things?
I got some letters and emails from people who are like me or who are believers who said, well, great, wait on, right on, way to go. I've heard a lot of unfavorable comment from people who claimed that I was a pompous jerk who had no business mouthing off on the subject and that I shouldn't have belittled the Buddhist faith and so on. I really wasn't trying to deliver
I don't think so either. What do you think drives the negative comments about, Buddhism aside, I don't think you were trying to denigrate Buddhism, but what do you think drives the negative comments about Christianity?
It has always been a puzzling thing to me. The Bible even speaks of it, that you speak the name Jesus Christ, and I don't mean to make a pun here, but all hell breaks loose. And it has always been thus. It is explosive. I didn't even say the name in that way. I simply spoke of the Christian faith, but that was enough to trigger this reaction. It triggers a very powerful reaction in people who do not share the faith and who do not believe in it.
All right. Always has. Everybody. Thanks very much. We appreciate it. Happy New Year. When we come right back.
Interesting.
Fascinating, yes.
A little bit long clip there for our show, right.
But he did note that he is a believer himself. That did come out in his comments.
That's what he said, yeah. Yeah. And his comments certainly reflected that. And of course, you know, take him at his word. You never know the content of that or what
right.
type of.
Right.
But he was preaching salvation in Jesus Christ, redemption, forgiveness. I mean, nothing wrong with that. That's the truth. Now, what do you think about making those statements as a participant of a news panel? Now, I believe he's a retired news anchor. He used to be just the nightly news anchor on Fox News, but I believe right. he's retired a few years ago. He still participates in certain panels and whatnot. What do you think about that?
Well, one, it's an exercise of his free speech, which is constitutional. Well, actually, it's not just in the Constitution. I believe that God has... That is an inalienable right, if I may cite Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration. So I think he was exercising his right of free speech. I also happen to believe that it is it was an opportunity that the Lord presented. Now, it may have stuck out like, you know, a sore thumb in that context, but of course, I didn't see the whole program, so I don't know how much time they spent on the moral failings of Tiger Woods.
I don't either, and that's a little bit beside the point. It's just right. being the occasion for these comments, but no, certainly we are all sinners and all in need of redemption and forgiveness, which can right. only be offered in Jesus Christ. But I think what struck me the most and what was refreshing about it is we typically watch these programs, and we may or may not listen to talk radio, but usually when we do, we listen for opinions. We want to hear people's opinions. That's why we listen. We want to have a reaction. We want them to make us think. But we often it's just unusual to find somebody's true opinion about religion, or it's certainly a Christian religion, on a program such as this, even though that's usually why we watch it.
Now, it's interesting. Yeah, I seem to remember that Brit Hume, being a Christian or becoming a Christian at some point in the past is how he may have had something to do with his not being on one of the other the former networks that he used to be a reporter. I could be wrong. This is going. My memory is cloudy.
That it's vaguely familiar to me.
I don't remember the detail, but something's niggling in the back of my mind. But I didn't think there was any trouble. Other than the fact that, of course, Christianity is exclusive, and that therefore means if Christianity is right, that Buddhism is wrong, and that's what offends people.
It is.
At the end of the day, that's the thing that he didn't put it that way, but that's how I would put it, is that the exclusive claims of the gospel are such that Buddhism can't save.
Now, let me put you on the spot for a second. Let's say somebody else said the exact same comments, basically, but they were a Muslim. And you were watching Fox News, and somebody's advice to Tiger Woods was to become a devout Muslim.
Right.
How would you react?
Well, if they're Muslim, I would disagree with them. But
of course.
They have the right. This is a country with free speech.
But would you send letters in detailing your outrage?
No, I might write and say, hey, friend, I'd like to tell you about the gospel. But that would be an apologetic or an evangelistic encounter, not a berating of him for sharing his views. Mm-hmm. We're getting very close to denying the right to free speech in this country. I mean, I think that's becoming... You know, there is no right in the Constitution of not being offended.
I actually just heard I might be mistaken, but I heard on a radio program that Ireland just put into effect a blasphemy law, which is punishable by, I believe, up to 25,000 euros if you say anything that offends a significant portion of a religious community, whether that be Christian or Muslim, whatever.
Well, that's going to be a problem because those religions are in conflict. So if you speak favorably of one, you're going to be speaking blasphemy of the other. I'm a Christian. Jesus Christ is the second person of the Holy Trinity. He is divine and human, and Muhammad ain't. I'm going on record with that.
So if you're in Ireland listening to this, please do not turn us into your local authorities. Because I don't want to get a bill.
Well, they're not the only country with blasphemy laws. I believe that some of the Middle Eastern countries were trying to get the UN recently to go along with something like that.
It's just fascinating to me in a strange way. Maybe I should say perplexing to me to think about all of these things and all these laws.
You can't have free speech without the possibility of offending people.
No, no.
Now, that doesn't mean that it's our goal as Christians to go out and offend, but the gospel itself, Paul says, is an offense to the sinner, okay? And there's no way to avoid that unless you're just going to shut up and say nothing. And as Christians, as ministers or future ministers, we cannot go down that road.
No. Actually, on a related subject, our next episode, we are going to look at the movie Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, which is a movie. Actually, that might be in the episode following. We haven't decided exactly if we're going to do Avatar or Expelled first, but
those will be interesting.
Yeah, pay attention and listen, because it's on a related subject. His whole goal is to demonstrate that we have lost the freedom of inquiry in our country issue of intelligent design. And that's his program, right, is to demonstrate that. It's a very related issue, and it's very concerning to think that, one, we can't say what we think, and two, we can't ask questions anymore.
You know, as soon as you, and this is kind of related, but as soon as you cut off the ability of people to debate, you do set up the context for something like a civil war. In my opinion, the American Civil War came about because the issue of slavery was not allowed to be ultimately solved through peaceful means. Mm. And so it was solved, not really well, but at least legally, constitutionally, it was solved through a war. It perhaps had the issue been debated, in clear terms. Can't rewrite history, but you've got to allow for freedom. Well, I just watched that movie again yesterday. I have a copy of it.
Yes, Expelled.
Very thought provoking, and of course you'll be talking more about that. That'll be an interesting episode.
Well, let me make one comment about the Civil War. What's interesting, I think, what you find in Mark Knowles' The Civil War is a theological conflict. It's a great book. The North did not have good exegetical arguments.
No, they didn't.
So I'll kick back just a little bit on that to say that there may have been opportunity for discussion and debate on the issue, but the South was the one that actually had exegetical arguments, arguments we disagree with now in terms of slavery by race. But nonetheless, or nevertheless, they were making exegetical arguments, and they were not persuaded by the North, who were not able to make exegetical arguments. And it wasn't until much later in the war, when the North started to become more covenantally minded and theologically minded in their arguments, that there was some ground made. Of course, the ultimate ground was made militarily, not theologically.
Well, no, you're exactly right that the North, of course, part of that was the abolition movement.
Yeah.
Very quickly moved out of the ambit of Orthodox Christianity and became the preserve of, I guess you would call it, the Romantic movement, especially in New England, as I understand it. And so therefore, Southerners who were wrong, I believe, on slavery wouldn't listen to people that they thought were heretics.
Yeah. Well,
right. I mean, that was part of that's part of the problem.
Right.
And it's interesting reading Noel's book, especially on the international front, right? Reading the assessment of the war parts of the world. Some of the assessments quite insightful, some of them being less than insightful.
wonderful. So that is our Reform Media Review for this week. Stay tuned the next 2 weeks. Hopefully we'll get to Expelled and Avatar, not necessarily in that order. But we would like to give a Reformed perspective on both of those, tell you what those movies are about, documentaries, what they're about, and try to have some healthy discussion on the subject. So, Jeff, thanks for joining.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's been a great discussion, and it's time for you to say what we want you always to say.
Yeah. Tole lege.
Thank you for listening.